بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسوله وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم تسليما كثيرا مزيدا إلى يوم الدين أما بعد. Some of the most popular questions that I've been getting since the start of Ramadan pertain to women and the issue of women on their menstrual cycle in this month. Most of our sisters are anguished at being unable to fast while everyone else is enjoying their ibadat. So we'll dedicate the few minutes of this halaqah to that issue. This halaqah is directed more towards sister, but brothers need to be patient, and it's also something they need to know. Because if they don't have a wife, for example, they have mothers, they have sisters, they have aunts, in the future, inshallah ta'ala, they're going to have daughters. So it will be something that they will need to know about. Let me start off by saying, first of all, our sisters should not feel anguished, nor sad, nor depressed, nor think that others beat you in ibadah, because you were ordered not to fast or pray in Ramadan by the same one who ordered others to fast and pray. So you're in a ibadah, you're in a worship by obedience to Allah. This is a feeling common among our sisters, and is shared by many of our sisters, and it was shared before that by our mother Aisha radiallahu anha. May Allah grant them, our sisters, lofty palaces next to that of Aisha. In the hadith in Sahih al-Bukhari, the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam was heading toward Hajj when he stopped in an area called Saraf, right before Mecca, on the outskirts of Mecca. And he seen Aisha was weeping and crying. He said, "What's the matter?" She said, "I wish I had not made Hajj this year." And the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam immediately knew what she was talking about. So he asked her, "Maybe you got your menses or period?" And Aisha replied, "Yes." The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam then comforted and consoled her. He told her, "This is a thing which Allah has ordained and decreed on all the daughters of Adam." After he comforted her, then he gave her the ruling. He said, "Do that which pilgrims do, except don't perform your tawaf around the Kaaba until you're clean." And pay attention to that statement, because we're going to refer to it a few times through this class. "Do that which pilgrims do, except performing tawaf around the Kaaba until you're clean." So it's the feeling of agony our sisters go through, of not being able to do significant special worships like the rest of the ummah in blessed times and in blessed situations. Rest assured, without a doubt, that any sister who truly, genuinely, sincerely was going to do a ibadah, such as fast and pray, both fard and nafil, yet the only thing that stopped her short of that was good in her monthly days, then she will get the full reward, inshallah, not a tiny bit less than if she had done it. That a tiny bit less than if she fasted or prayed. إِذَا مَرِضَ الْعَبْدُ أَوْ سَافَرُ. Listen to this hadith. إِذَا مَرِضَ الْعَبْدُ أَوْ سَافَرُ كُتِبَ لَهُ مِثْلَ مَا كَانَ يَعْمَلُ مُقِيمًا أَوْ صَحِيحًا. In Sahih al-Bukhari, the Prophet ﷺ said, if one gets sick or travels, he will get the same reward as he was when he was healthy and not traveling. He was deprived for a legitimate reason, so he'll get the reward. The reward continues on. A woman in her days is no different than that. You can take the hadith to mean, if a woman is on her menstrual cycle, she will get the same reward of deeds as if she had fasted. When one is deprived of ibadah because of something beyond their means, they will get the reward for deeds they missed out on, because it wasn't by their choice. The hadith mentioned, if one gets sick, they'll get their deeds of ibadah they missed out on because they're sick. One who's on her monthly days is very similar, near identical to that. The thing, the common denominator, is both can't perform their ibadah, and they can't perform it by force and not by choice. Ibn Hajar said this hadith applies to anyone who otherwise would perform a deed, yet is not able to continue for circumstances beyond their means. There's several ahadith indicating that if one is not able to perform worship due to circumstances not under their control, the reward of it will continue on. They will get the reward. Even in jihad, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam one time left in a battle, and he left men behind in Medina. And he said, "Those men who didn't join us," told the people who went with them, "not a step you took or a valley crossed, except they'll get the identical reward as you, because they were held back for a legitimate reason." The point of all this is, don't feel sad, distressed, agonized. sisters who do not do their ibad are doing worship because Allah told them not to do so, and they will get the ajr insha'Allah ta'ala if they are sincere. The next point. Can a sister, a common question that I got pertaining to this, can the sister take a pill to delay her menstrual cycle? The simple answer is yes. Why? Because matters like these fall under the general rule of in Islam of being halal unless proven haram. The only one I've read that considered it prohibited that I know of is Imam Malik. He considered it prohibited, but he also stated the reason is because it causes harm. And that's a totally different reason if it causes harm. In Al-Mughni, he quoted Imam Ahmad as permitting it. And likewise, Al-Shafi'i permitted it. And it's very clear it's permissible unless it causes harm. That's a totally different story. You have to do your study, you have to do your homework, and make sure it doesn't cause harm to you. In fact, I remember, let me tell you this, I remember when I was 10 years old, maybe 11 years old, wallahi, I remember I sat with my father in one of his halaqa in the haram in Medina, Sheikh Atiyya Salam, rahmatullah alayh, and he's mentioned the hadith that stuck in my mind about miswak, and one of the benefits about miswak. And I later read it in Musannaf Abdul Razzaq, when Muammar said that Ibn Umar was asked, can a woman take medication to delay her menstrual cycle? And Ibn Umar said, there's no problem. And he mentioned or recommended the soup or water of miswak. So they had this back in the days. What they did was bring a miswak, and you make sure it's Araq miswak, the original miswak, the right main tree, and not similar close plants. They cut it into small pieces, boil it in a pot for what today would be about 10 minutes, and you drink it 2 to 3 times a day, starting on the day before you expect the menstrual cycle to begin. I'm not sure if that works with the miswaks we have now, because I label them as expired miswaks. The miswaks that I used to get in Medina, I used to buy them from sellers who would freshly cut them days before they sold them. And some types have a strong natural taste, a peppermint-like flavor sometimes that's so strong you couldn't even keep the miswak in your mouth for a few minutes. That's natural, not something they added. In another side issue, and I don't want to get distracted with it, but let me mention it. In the common mistakes during Ramadan article that was taken from our fiqh classes, I said, and I don't feel that toothpaste is even makruh. It's mubah, actually, based on qiyas, analogy, because miswak is permissible throughout the day when you're fasting, even towards the late evening. It's permissible. And the miswak at times has a stronger taste than the toothpaste. So that was the rationale behind it. The miswaks we get here are outdated. Even if you buy them overseas sometimes, many of them are also outdated as well. Going back to our topic, I know that the soup of miswak was used in the old days as means for delaying the cycle. However, I'm not sure this day and age if these miswaks that come to us will have any effect because of how the timing since they were cut. They're old and they're, like I said, expired. It's worth a try, and if it works, let us know. We'll pass the word on. The next point, what can a woman do during these days? Well, she can do everything except fast, make salah, or make tawaf if she goes to Umrah. And she makes up her fast, but she doesn't make up her salah. She can do everything else. And what happens here is a problem. Some sisters think it's that time of month, they don't fast. So Ramadan's on pause, and they go sit in front of the TV and neglect these blessed days. That's the problem. You can't fast, yes. You can't pray, yes. But you're still in blessed days, and there's plenty of other ibadah to do. There's dhikr, that exerts your energy in dua. You can recite the Quran, which will bring us to the next point. The next point is, can a woman recite Quran? And let me break it into two. Can she recite Quran, A? And B, can she touch the Quran? And both are disputed issues. Let's take number A. As to reciting the Quran from her memory without touching, there's a dispute on that, and the correct opinion is that which Ibn Taymiyyah states in his 21st volume of the Fatawa. And Imam Malik and Shawkani and others adopted the same opinion, that it's permissible for a woman to read from her memory or if she's not touching the Quran, because the origin is that matters on these are halal unless proven by a solid proof that they are haram, and there's no solid proof. So let me repeat that there's no solid, authentic proof to indicate it's haram for a woman to recite the Quran. Imam Malik and Imam Ahmad and Ibn Taymiyyah, and like I said, Shawkani said a woman can read from memory because these are matters that can be prohibited with solid proof, and there's no solid proof on that, and that's correct. There's a saying attributed to the Prophet ﷺ that a woman on her menstrual cycle cannot read Quran, and that's in Ibn Majah and Tirmidhi, but the thing about it is it's weak, so weak that you can't even attribute it to the Prophet Muhammad ﷺ. Some used analogy to compare a woman to a man who's on his major impurity, who's junub. We have authentic, clear proof that hadith stating that the Prophet ﷺ did not recite while he was junub. But in order to compare a male who's on a major impurity to a woman on her menstrual cycle, it must be similar in order for qiyas to take place, analogy to take place. A man junub on his major impurity is by choice, not by force. He can get his lazy self up and go take a shower. While a woman is not like that. She's forced to wait. So there's differences that invalidate the use of analogy in qiyas. Now, a woman getting her monthly days is a matter that happens to all women since the Prophet ﷺ time and even before that. And there was many Muslim women then. And the Prophet ﷺ had many wives, sallallahu alayhi wasallam wa radiyallahu anhun. And they taught us the utmost deep details of the life of the Prophet ﷺ and their lives. Do you think we wouldn't have had at least one authentic, solid hadith that it's haram if it was really haram? The next point. Can she read from the Quran? Can a sister read from the Quran, meaning by touching it now? This matter goes back to the root issue of can one touch the Quran while he's impure? The great overwhelming majority of the ulama say that one must be pure. The minority say it's permissible for one to touch the Quran if they're impure. And among them is Ibn Abbas, al-Sha'bi, al-Dahhak, al-Hakam ibn Utaybah, and Hamad ibn Abi Sulaiman, and Dawood al-Dhahiri, and al-Dhahiriyya. However, we don't go by vote. We go by proof. It's not democracy here. In my second year of Sharia study, when I was in Medina, I had to do a short essay on every class that we took. I think it was 15 pages or so. And for my fiqh class, my teacher told me, your topic is this. You got to write on this. And it was this matter. And that was in the early 90s. And with Islamic knowledge over time, as long as you research, continue to research, you develop and grow in your knowledge. And as time goes by, you find and you research and you develop in your knowledge, you find the hadith you missed out on, you find the opinion you didn't know of, you didn't take heed of, you find the hadith you thought was authentic and it turned out to be weak or the opposite. But since then, till today, on this issue, I stick behind the conclusion I put in the final sentence of my thesis. And I wrote in there, I said, on this matter, the conclusion is every explicit direct saying on this matter is not authentic. And that which is authentic is not explicit. Let me repeat. Every explicit saying on this issue, on this matter, is not authentic. And that which is authentic is not explicit. For example, there's many non-authentic hadith. But there's one that many use, which is a verse in the Quran. It's a verse in the Quran. لا يمسوا إلا المطهرون. It's on the tip of the tongue of the people who use this as proof. In the verses, a book, none can touch but the purified. Ibn Abbas said this is the book in the heavens, اللوح المحفوظ. It's not even talking about the Quran. It's referring to the angels and the preserved tablets in the لوح المحفوظ, not us in the Quran. And even more so, the purified, the word purified in Arabic, you don't use mutahhar, except for those who are infallible. Me and you, you don't use that word for us. Even though similar to the word pure that we use. When we make wudu, we use mutatahir, not mutahhar. Mutahhar. Mutatahir, not mutahhar. Mutahhar is for infallible like the angels. More so, when the Prophet told Aisha the first hadith that I mentioned to you, he said, do everything women do except tawaf and salah. Hajj, people read Quran. They touch it, and they did it every single day, more so in Hajj, of course. So why didn't the Prophet ﷺ tell her, and do not touch the Quran, and do not recite the Quran? There's one authentic hadith, however, لا يمس القرآن إلا طاهر. Al-Hakim, and Ahmed, and Malik, and others said, no one touched the Quran but someone pure. But here, طاهر could mean pure from kufr, not necessarily pure from wudu. إنما المشركون نجس. The polis are impure. So that means the believers are pure. So it could mean here the purity of Islam. And there's other hadith that say إن المؤمن لا ينجس. A Muslim doesn't become impure. So it could be that as well. So it could be the impurity of Islam versus kufr. The hadith, this hadith, was a letter written from the Prophet ﷺ to Amr ibn Hizam, where he was living in Najran among Christians. So maybe that the Prophet ﷺ was directing him not to let non-believers touch the pages of the Quran. So basically, there's not explicit proof to prohibit it. And that which is explicit, it means it has other meanings. It tells other meanings. Putting the issue of haram and halal aside on this issue and this matter, there's an issue of respect. In the Quran, the word of Allah needs to be respected. That's a different story. Even though I don't believe there's explicit, authentic hadith saying that a Muslim must be pure to touch the Quran, I don't recall any time from when I was a little kid that I ever, while remembering, touched the Quran while I wasn't on wudu. Even though it's not a must, there's an issue of respect. ذَلِكَ وَمَنْ يُعَظِّمْ شَعَائِرَ اللَّهِ فَإِنَّا مِنْ تَقْوَى الْقُلُوبِ. Those who honor and sacred the obligations of Allah, that's better for them, and that's a sign of their taqwa. That's a sign they got great taqwa in their hearts. Some of the Salaf, like Ibn Umar, used to make wudu before touching the Quran. Others, out of respect, used to make wudu, go brush their teeth with a miswak, face the Qibla, and sit humbly with respect and recite Quran. Because this is the word of Allah. A sister may choose to evade this entire dispute and read the Quran with some kind of barrier. And that's permissible. Or she can go further and read from an iPhone and an iPad and a computer, because that's not considered a mushaf. The ruling doesn't apply on that. That's definitely permissible, because the ruling of a mushaf does not apply on that. The time is up. We'll conclude with this. Jazakumullahu khaira. Wa sallallahu ala sayyidina Muhammad wa ala alihi wa sahbihi wa sallam.